This afternoon, this morning, as I promised you, we will be having an interview with Ravindra Swarup Prabhu. He is my spiritual master, and I know him as His Grace Ravindra Swarup. And we are today talking a little bit in detail about what we have been reading about, and that is the concept of God allowing the love for Him to be shown through very intimate associates of His that are eternally dwelling in the spiritual world, His most favorite dwelling, which we call Goloka Vrindavan. And Ravindra is going to clarify for us some of the concepts that are being presented in the Krishna book. And one concept, Ravindra, I hope you would help us understand about, because it seems most religion is trying to help us understand the need for becoming free from sex life. And Krishna, we see revealing in here a very unique situation where He is dancing with girls and He is late at night in the forest. So it seems God is revealing to choose as the purest form of love for Him, that expressed by youthful girls who are thinking of Him as attractive and a young boy. Can you help us understand better how this relationship that Krishna is having with these souls is so beneficial for us to come to an understanding of what pure love is?
Okay, I'll tackle that one. By the way, thank you, Akant. It's nice to be back again on your show. What we see depicted in the Krishna book from the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam are the exchanges of love that God has with His pure devotees in spiritual bodies. The idea of a spiritual body is at least also there in Christianity. That means when we are spiritual persons, and that personhood is expressed in a body that's not material and that's made of spirit. Characteristic of spiritual body is that there's every part can perform the functions of every other part, even though there are separate parts. Right now in the material world, the soul is one thing, the mind is something else, the body is something else again, and we are not our bodies, we're not our minds. But when we have realized our spiritual personhood, then that's expressed in the spiritual body, and in that spiritual body we find that there's no difference between the soul and the body, the soul and the mind and the body, and so on. So that's a different situation. So what we see here are pure expressions of love of God that are taking place in the spiritual realm. Now, this love of God has different kinds of expressions, and the analysis from Krishna's pastimes is that there are five kinds of relationships that one can have toward God. The first is called passive adoration. This is called shantaras, that one is aware of how small one is and how great God is. And one is so filled with awe and veneration at the greatness of God that one can only passively adore Him. You can't think that there's anything I could do for God because He's obviously so much greater than I am. This is called Shanta Rasa. Next is Dasha. Dasha means servitorship. That's like the feelings we see here in this world between a child, the feelings that a child has toward a parent, or a servant toward a master in those days when there were decent relationships like that. These, in the material world, these are reflections of this original spiritual rasa, in which one has the appreciation for God that's there in the passive adoration or neutral love of God, but at the same time there's an impetus to do something. Let me do something. Let me do something. To just want to serve. So this is, there's an added feature to this dasha rasa.
I'm not hearing you here. I just want to double check to make sure.
All right. Because last time I gave a whole speech, and then we had to start all over again because your machinery is so antiquated. Let's see.
Okay, I am picking you up. It's just very, very low. But I can put this on a computer magnified.
Okay, so it's not broadcast quality, huh?
It would be. I think probably it's just because, see, this is not made, it's made to be connected to an amplifier.
Oh, I see. So you're not listening with an amplifier.
Not, right.
Yeah, okay.
Someone's at the door.
Yes, it sounds like someone's at the door. Let me go get the door. Let me cue it up.
Yeah.
Giri told me that it would be better for you even if it were at 5, and so he was going to call you and tell you.
And he didn't.
Yeah.
And I raced over right after work.
Yeah.
So.
Are you okay to wait?
Yeah, that's not a problem.
If you want to sit here quietly, he's interviewing me for a Canadian radio show.
Yeah. Okay. My old show.
Yeah, your old show. Yeah, that very same show.
Yeah, it was just a matter. I knew you were supposed to be going out at 6 o'clock.
Yeah, but the 6 o'clock thing has been canceled, so no problem.
Okay, if you don't mind, I'll sit and listen.
Yeah, so you can just sit and listen, and then we can talk.
Okay.
We're finished. He has to leave at 5 anyway because he has some duty service to take out. And I think Giri is coming to talk to me at 6 anyway.
Well, when I thought you were going out at 6, I thought, well, I guess the sooner I get there, maybe
that's right,
the better.
Yeah. Well, he didn't call you. I'm sorry. Yeah.
He might have called and left a message at home. I've been up all day.
Okay. No. Either we have our usual technical problems here.
Oh, well. I remember that.
Okay. You can tell me where I left off.
No, you just left off. There's an impetus to do something.
Yeah.
Really do something. And this
is... Yeah, okay.
Das.
Okay.
Okay.
When I was a child, we had
Wait,
some...
I haven't started yet. You ready?
Yeah, okay. Just to give an example, when I was a child, we had some big famous baseball player visit our town. I think Mickey Mantle or somebody. And I noticed that some kids were just so awestruck by being in his presence, they could just sit there and gape. But some other kids wanted to do something. Can I carry your bat? Can I carry your glove? He's perfectly capable of carrying his own bat and his own glove, but they had the impetus to do something. So that's like the dasha, servitorship. Then there's another another kind of relationship toward God, which is called Sakya, or fraternal. Here there's a sense of equality. There it's like the love between two siblings. So some devotees have this relationship with God. The sense of awe and reverence is decreased. And correspondingly, the love is, or affection is, more spontaneously and intimately expressed. Now, in order for souls to have such relationships with God, God causes them to forget the vast difference that separates them. Because it is Krishna himself who wants to have these loving relationships that are more intimate. He's so overwhelmingly awesome that all of us would just stand by at a distance and offer our respects and be too intimidated to get very close. But he also wants intimate relationships. So for those souls that are attracted to God in that way, he facilitates this exchange by causing his greatness or majesty to be eclipsed by his sweetness and tenderness. So therefore we see, especially in Goloka Vrindavan, these intimate relationships, so that there are some souls in Vrindavan where Krishna is like a young cowherd boy, who are the same, and they play like boys play together. They fight, they wrestle, they have to play games, contests, and so on. Then, to go further, there is the relationship called vatsalya. That is to say, like a parent. The devotee feels parental love for the Lord. Here, there's even a sense of superiority, in the sense that a parent thinks that they have to take care of and protect the child. This child is helpless and needs my nourishment and my protection.
God being the child.
God being the child, right. God is now the child. And so the devotee, in one sense, is like greater than God. Of course, their sense is, again, it's enhanced servants. Just like, really, the parents render more service to the child than the child does to the parent. And so there are devotees who have this parental relationship with God. And then finally, there's the conjugal relationship, which you began by talking about, where Krishna is like a teenage boy, and here these young girls, and they're going out alone together in the forest. And this is the most intimate relationship. And here, all those other things, intimacy, superiority, sometimes being greater, sometimes being lesser, all these heightened feelings of love are there in this relationship, this erotic relationship between the living entity and God. So all these, because God is a person and he has personal relationships, all those relationships are there originally in God. Whatever you see here in this world is a reflection, or comes from what something that is there in the Supreme, because it says atato, that janmari asyataha, the Supreme or Absolute Truth is that from which everything comes, and so everything here comes from there. But there in it is in its original and pure form, and here it is a reflection. And so what is highest in the spiritual world as a reflection will appear as what is lowest here. Is that okay? Do we answer that one? Okay.
Yeah.
You happy with it? All right.
With that in mind, the question then arises in my mind, is it considered good for a soul, be they male or female, to think of their relationship with God as that is of a lover? Because if someone is in a male body, is this kind of relationship with God giving God the most pleasure? It would seem that if we are going to be come free from sexual pleasures that are of a perverted nature in this world, then developing a relationship with God in this way would be satisfying in the purest way possible. And it seems like a relationship of that nature may be able to be developed.
That's a confusing question. Okay, go ahead.
Anybody?
Yeah. Well, first thing we have to understand is that these relationships on a spiritual level have some analogy with the corresponding relationships on a material level. Yet, we cannot take the features of the material relationship and impose them on the spiritual. So, conjugal relationships, sexual relationships in the material world are motivated by lust. Whereas in the spiritual world, these sexual relationships are actually based on love. And we have to understand the difference between kama, which is lust, and prema, which is love, and which I'll explain. But we cannot really enter into or even understand and appreciate these relationships, including the conjugal relationship with Krishna, until we ourselves are completely free from material sexual desire. Otherwise, we'll mix the things up together, and then we'll, as people do sometimes, engage in degraded sexual practice and say they're spiritual. So this is to be avoided. So kama, or lust, is the desire to satisfy one's own senses. And in a sexual relationship, it's to use the partner or the other to satisfy my own desires. And when there's love, pure love means that I do not care anything about my own satisfaction, but am simply interested in the satisfaction of the other. We do not actually see much love in this world. In normal sexual relationships, there's a kind of a deal. I'll be the instrument. you be the instrument for my pleasure, and I'll reciprocate by being the instrument for your pleasure. And it's a kind of a business deal. And if somebody slacks off on one end, that's the end of the relationship. Because, and it's true that sexual relationships make us extremely selfish. You do not see selflessness in these matters. But in the spiritual world, the gopis desire simply to satisfy Krishna's senses. And they really, their only pleasure is to see that Krishna is satisfied in all respects. Otherwise, they have no other way of feeling happiness. That's why, for example, when a gopi thinks that another gopi has qualities or characteristics that will be more pleasing to Krishna than what she possesses, she'll make arrangements for that gopi to get together with Krishna, because she wants to see Krishna satisfied. So this is the difference. And so we always have to keep that in mind. As a spiritual being, we understand that every spirit soul has innately one of these relationships with Krishna that's inherent in us. And it, right now it's unexpressed. Now we are transmigrating through various bodies in this material world. Whether right now I have a male body or a female body, we change back and forth all the time, and also on different species of life, is really not relevant to my spiritual identity. And my spiritual identity becomes known to me by the process by which I become detached from matter and attached to Krishna. I have to dissolve this false identification I have with the material body, and that false identification is created and fostered by our desires to enjoy in the world. So as those desires atrophy, the same way our innate spiritual desires manifest in relationship to Krishna, and we discover simultaneously who God is and who we are and what our relationship, eternal relationship with Him is.
Now, you know what? This show is being, this program is being managed by a guy who does one program called Queer Radio. He's really into homosexuality, although he himself is heterosexual. Uh-huh. He has a girlfriend and he's planning on getting married, but he's just like, I think, into the mood of, you know, wanting to cater to these groups, these lobbying groups. But I see an opportunity here.
I don't know if I want to go there.
Well, to be able to preach to him in such a way, I mean, you're doing it so wonderfully.
Okay, right? Well,
the
fine.
Explanation is really good. Mm-hmm. Because I think something lacking is the understanding that these homosexuals are carrying over, just like you pointed out, from previous lives, mm-hmm. the attachments to previous bodies.
Oh, sure.
And those carryovers are, you know, mm-hmm. above and beyond what they're now experiencing, mm-hmm. as they don't know whether they're male mm-hmm. or female or what mm-hmm. they are. Mm-hmm. So if somehow we can, that's why I was kind of bringing out in this next question.
I don't, you know, I'd rather talk about Krishna. I mean, I don't know if I want to get into queer issues at this point and mix them up.
Okay. But no,
it's true. In the early days of the movement, people come to us and say, well, I'm a homosexual. We say, oh, Krishna's the most attractive male.
Now, see, the idea, too, that we are all female in relationship mm-hmm. to Krishna because he's a male, this is something unique to Krishna consciousness as well.
Yeah, but that's in a somewhat philosophical sense, because mm-hmm. when you're talking about spiritual bodies for rasa, some are male and some are female, depending on the.
Well, that's what I was going to ask about too, because it is kind of fascinating about how that mm-hmm. still remains as an absolute truth with the eternal relationships that these souls are having with Krishna, and still he's taking great satisfaction in the positions that they've held eternally, even though they are in a completely different rasa altogether. We have this concept of higher and lower and between everything.
No, like that the higher and lower is okay. We'll clear that up.
Yeah. Okay.
You can ask me as well. If you describe these hierarchy of rasas, is one really better than the other, or
right,
more pleasing to
right,
Krishna?
Okay. It seems now we see in the material world that people seem to be thinking of their relationships with their wives as the most supreme kind of relationship they can experience as far as love is concerned. So if we look at God loving His servants and His most beloved as well, like we love one another, it would seem that there's a hierarchy, so to speak, of relationships. So does this apply actually to God? Is He more satisfied by one soul's eternal relationship to Him in their particular rasa, as we call it, a relationship in the pastimes that He's carrying out with them, or is it different with God? I'm going to get this as close to you as possible, because I know okay. that thing is
okay.
not as sensitive as I'd like it to be when you're ready.
Okay. Actually, the relationship we have with God is innate within us, as I already said. And so some souls are just constitutionally situated in servitorship. Some souls constitutionally situated in fraternal, some in neutral, some in parental, some in conjugal. We discover what that is. And because it's our nature, what happens is we will find that most satisfying. It won't be that we'll feel deprived in any way. I list them in terms of ascending intimacy, but that's just for classification purposes. From the point of view of the spirit soul, whatever your innate way of relating to God is, that's what's most satisfying to you. And that's what's in which you can, your love for God can be most fully expressed. At the same time, that's what God wants, that relationship with each individual soul. That's the most intense. Krishna wants intensity of loving relationships. And so he doesn't prefer one to the other. And in fact, he has all of them simultaneously anyway. So he just has a variety of relationships with varieties of devotees. And in all of them, he has the satisfaction of these intimate relationships. So he's just satisfying relating to us the way that we actually are. So in this way, we cannot say that one is superior to the other.
This question has always made me wonder. Of course, there's the description of Srimad Bhagavatam, but I wanted to ask how souls appear in a spiritual world. There's no birth there. Mm-hmm. You didn't
suddenly thought my phone is on.
You better turn it off. Yeah.
I saw your phone sitting there, and something.
That's not a phone. I'm recording.
Oh my God,
the Srimad Tate Minister here.
Oh, okay.
I turned my phone off in the other room. Let's don't ask that question.
Okay.
That's really not it.
Okay.
Because I can't tell you how they appear.
Srimad Bhagavatam talks about the soul being delivered from this material world on swan carriers, right? Like Vishnu comes in.
Yeah, but how they
get to us?
How the spirit, and depends on which part of the spiritual world,
Another question would be about parental relationships in the spiritual kingdom as well. Mm-hmm. If there's no birth there, are you in a family? Is there any familial kind of situation?
Yes, let's talk about something else. Let's talk about, because these are not really central issues about relationships with Krishna. There are all these questions about what it's like in the spiritual world.
Yeah.
And we have some idea, but really, basically, like Prabhupada said, for example, it's described, and it's different in Krishna Loka from Vaikuntha Loka, and so things will get complicated if you want to explain all that stuff.
Okay.
So better not to. Let's just talk about Goloka Vrindavan
and
Krishna Loka. So why don't you ask this question?
Simultaneous. Okay,
why don't you ask this question?
Yeah, I'm glad.
Ask a question like this: that in this, we see that when we have relationships in the material world, that sometimes they're broken, and that sometimes even if they're not broken, we grow tired of them. And, a guy has a relationship with a woman or his wife, and one grows tired of the other, and they look for another.
Mm-hmm.
So what about these relationships with Krishna? Do they get broken, or do people get tired of them?
Okay. Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
So you mentioned that there are eternal relationships with Krishna, and it seems from our experience here in the material world that after spending any amount of time with other human beings, we come to the point where either they're not satisfying us or we're not satisfying them, and we have problems and difficulties arise. So how does the relationship that we have with God differ from that if that's going to be an eternal relationship?
Okay, there we go. Okay. There's some interesting features about these relationships with Krishna. Of course, one thing is we should understand or try to understand a little bit how an exchange of love in spiritual bodies will be different from exchanges of love we have here in material bodies. Because really we're hidden from each other. There's the soul, which is the most hidden. There's my mind, which is somewhat hidden, and there's my physical body. What's going on in my mind may not be able to easily read what's in my face or my gestures or my postures. You have to figure out what's going on from me. So our intimacy is sometimes very difficult. There are many misunderstandings and many miscommunications, and our intimacy is always impeded by the very bodies we sometimes use to achieve it. But in spiritual bodies, as I mentioned before, there's no difference between the soul and the body, the soul and the mind and the body. We are one unified entity. So that means whatever is happening in the mind is also displayed in the body. And whatever is in the soul is also displayed that way. So the body that we have is actually the fullest expression and embodiment of love of God. It is just the expression of love of God in an outward way, a manifestation of it. So that's one. So these exchanges of intimacy in spiritual bodies, we cannot imagine anything like it. And especially if we consider that one limb or part can perform the function of all the other parts. So even with a glance, there can be more intimacy than we have, you know, even in the most private of sexual embraces between Krishna and the gopis. So that's one thing. Now this is the other thing that happens is that there's a dynamic that takes place, and because of this dynamic relationship between Krishna and his devotees, actually we find that Krishna's bliss and the devotees' bliss is ever increasing. It's not that their bliss, that you reach some absolute maximum. There's no such thing. Just like there's no top number. Any number how big, you can always add another one, and another one, and another one. So similarly, happiness has no upper limit. So if we let's think, here's Radha and Krishna together. And this is what happens. They're together, and Radha looks at Krishna, and she sees how attractive and beautiful Krishna is. And when she sees that, she fills with joy. She fills with happiness. And because she fills with happiness, her beauty increases. You see, here's the spiritual body, right? Her happiness increases, and so her physical beauty increases. See, in the material world, people look better when they're happy. It's true, and they look worse when they're sad. And sometimes they say, you know, even a woman who's considered fairly plain on her wedding day looks beautiful because of her happiness. But there's a limit. Because the material body simply imposes limitations like this. But there's no such limitation in the spiritual world. So when Radharani's happiness increases, she becomes more beautiful. And then when Krishna sees that Radharani has become more beautiful, his joy increases, and as a result, his beauty also increases. And when Radharani sees that Krishna has become even more beautiful, her happiness increases, and consequently, she becomes even more beautiful, and so it goes on and on forever. It never stops. So there's nothing like this in the material world. See, so people it's not that I've reached the maximum happiness and now I'm getting a little bored. No, it's always fresh, always new, and always greater and greater and greater.
Amazing.
It is. It is amazing. Wow. That's the description of Chaitanya Charitamrita.
To even be able to talk about these subjects is so blessed, a privilege to be able to talk about these things. Where do you think would be a good place to take it now?
I don't know.
We might get back into the purity of being able to develop this, and then maybe we want to get into the means of being able to develop the purity in order to be able to experience the love. I know you've been practicing Krishna consciousness for probably going on 40 years now, and I know that these experiences of love that you're talking about are not an everyday occurrence with everyone on the planet, and they are something that, as you speak about them, I become more and more desirous of wanting to be able to experience that kind of love. So this process that you've been engaging in for so long called Krishna consciousness, can you explain to us somewhat of its application so that we can learn to develop this kind of love for God?
Okay. Well, first of all, we have to understand that we are all lovers of God. Every living being is a lover of God. But what's happened is that right in our materially conditioned life, those of us in the material world have at the same time contracted some competitive feelings toward God. And are in the material world. We are eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. That's the nature of the spirit soul. But because we want to embark on our own God project, then we have acquired these material bodies. And then because of that, our love for God gets deflected to other things. Now, what we're looking for is Krishna. But at the same time, we're in this peculiar situation that we're naturally lovers of God. But at the same time, we have also become God's competitor. We want to lord it over the creation. We want to become the greatest. We want to become the biggest. We're not interested in being servants of God. So because that has happened, this desire to love gets placed on other things. And because of that, there's actually in this world no adequate object for our love. We reach adolescence, a boy or a girl, they fall in love. That's the big thing, right? The romantic love is extolled in our culture as kind of the height experience of things. But at the same time, we find that kind of romantic love is something that happens to very young people. In Shakespeare's play, Romeo and Juliet, they're 14 or 15 years old. It doesn't happen when you're much older than that, because you know better. Because when you actually give yourself over to somebody like that for love, now you're really open to being hurt. You know, now the loved object can turn away, can find somebody else, can die. And the suffering that happens is almost unbearable. And when you recover, you think, I'm never going to do that again. So in so many ways, our desire to love is baffled in this world. There's no adequate object, because everything we repose our feelings of love for is temporary. But our desire to love wants to go on and expand without any limit. It can't do it here. And so we become increasingly frustrated and embittered and cynical. This is the fate of things in this material world. We are looking for bliss and happiness that goes on without any end. And it's simply not available here. So the thing we can learn from the frustrations of trying to love in the material world is to try to understand why we are really suffering and what is really our situation. The fact that we want happiness that goes to an end is really goes on without any end. It is evidence of our eternal nature. And so therefore, this path of spiritual life is to clear away the accumulated garbage so that our pure love can again become manifest and be displayed in its original form. So first of all, we really have to understand what the material world is like. In one sense, we should become disillusioned and have a pessimistic view of life in this world, because a pessimistic view is the only sane view. And to understand that in the material world there is actually no happiness. There may be moments of pleasure, but they don't go on forever. In the Hollywood movies, there's the standard plot: boy meets girl, boy loses girl, boy gets girl again, they live happily ever after, right? So that's the thing. You see, they meet, they fall in love, there's some impediment, they're separated, and finally they get together. And then in the last moments, you know, here they are going off together in the sunset, the music swells up, you know, and the end, you know, and everybody's blissed out. Keep the cameras rolling. Go on. Keep on rolling till you actually come to see what happens over the course of time. So this is the nature of things in this world. It all ends with old age and disease and death. We just have to know this. So we need to place our love where it really belongs. We need to make that decision. To turn around, we are looking in the wrong place. We are trying to find satisfaction of the soul by satisfying our senses in this world. And as Mick Jagger famously said, we try and we try and we try and we try, but we can't get it. So that's why the spiritual path is there. And everywhere we see, in any bona fide spiritual path, we always see that there are restrictions and prohibitions, saying we shouldn't do this and we shouldn't do that. That there's asceticism, and there's regulation on the gratification of the senses. Nowadays, these are not understood and they're resented by people. They think that this is the path to misery. This is what people think, that in the old days there were these nasty old guys, patriarchs, bitter, sour old men who didn't want people to have fun. And they propagated these life-denying religions and moralities with it. You can't do this, you can't do that, this is wrong, this is sinful, that's sinful, this is sinful. And now we are burdened with this inheritance from the past. And when we really try to be happy, the residual guilt makes us miserable. And really, the path to liberation is to get rid of all those denials and regulations from the past, and to just shuck off all these feelings of guilt so we can immerse ourselves fully into the life of sensual pleasure. This is what we think. But that way ultimately lies suffering, because the more we do this, the more we identify ourselves with the material body, and the more we suffer as happening to us what only happens to the body. It's terrible. And for a few cheap thrills, we have to suffer death in this material world. This death is an illusion we've imposed upon us, ourselves, due to our desire to enjoy in this world. It's a high, high price to pay. So what we have to understand is what we see when we see these pronouncements against excessive sense gratification, or these statements in praise of renunciation and asceticism, is there's actually a reason for it. There's a purpose for it. We don't know the purpose anymore. But the purpose is that these are the conditions under which we can begin to experience real happiness, a real pleasure on the spiritual platform. So we have to understand this, that the actual path to happiness to a materialistic person looks like suffering. People ask me, when they see we follow four regulative principles. We don't eat any meat, fish, or eggs. We don't take any intoxicants. We don't engage in any illicit sex. Really? That no sex outside of marriage, and in marriage for procreation of children. And the real idea is to minimize sexual activity. And finally, we don't gamble, engage in frivolous, speculative, and time-wasting activities. These are our regular principles. And when people hear this, they say, what do you do? They sound like we've chosen a life of misery. It looks to them like the doors to suffering. But it is not. It's the door to happiness. And when one takes up the practice of Krishna consciousness, especially by following those restrictions, while at the same time coming into contact with Krishna in the form of his names, in the form of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Just by chanting, we are in contact with Krishna. Now, in our conditioned state, we cannot yet appreciate that, but still, that contact is purifying. And so you have the positive, the bringing of our attention and our directed toward the God in connection with God, connection with the Supreme, in the supremely portable and convenient form of a mantra, a spiritual sound. And at the same time, we practice some abstentions from the material world. With these two things together, the positive and the negative, then a very potent spiritual progress is possible. Very quickly, we start to get an inkling of the taste of spiritual happiness. And we start to lose interest in so-called material happiness. What looked like happiness now appears to us as something else. So then advancement becomes very natural. What we need to do for spiritual life is not so much and not put something in, but just get rid of the garbage. We are a spiritual souls. We have a relationship with Krishna, but it's obscured. We have so much gunk and junk and contamination and pollution in our minds from not just this life, but so many lifetimes. There's this accumulated toxic waste dump in our hearts. If we want to clean up the environment, this is the environment, the environment of our own minds that has to be cleaned up. The cleansing agent is the Hare Krishna mantra, and is very potent. If we try to chant this mantra with some attention and care and respect, this stuff will go away, and immediately we will start to feel. We'll start to feel the presence of something really special, the presence of the divine. And at first, the experience is something like that of standing outside in the morning before the sun rises. At first the sky is dark, and then the sky just starts to get a little paler. You can't even, something different is happening. And then it gets lighter and lighter and lighter, and then streams of light are shooting up in the sky, and the clouds are turning pink and everything, and then boom, the sun rises. So this way, gradually, Krishna makes his appearance in our hearts by the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. And in response to Krishna, our feelings toward him are naturally pulled out. They're elicited just by that relationship with Krishna. So when we see, when we find out who God is by experience, we also see who we are. God realization and self realization, they happen together, and we see actually what everything is. Everything becomes illuminated. So that's a process which one can put into practice and actually have genuine spiritual experiences. It's not just some theory to speculate about, but it's actually, if there's theory, it's as a guide to practice, and you can see for yourself that there's realized knowledge, and that what has been stated by people in the past is actually valid. You can see by your own experience.
I just want to say, Ravindra, you are everything I could ever hope. I really appreciate these times.
Okay. Maybe we should end the program, huh?
Yeah, let's see. I'm sorry I'm getting so sentimental here. I'm getting choked up. Actually, we got about 2 minutes left, so that was time perfect.
Okay, good. You can do your little wind up, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Once again, our program is being drawn to a close. I want to thank you so much, Ravindra, for being with us again, and hope that you'll join us again sometime in the near future. Thank you very much.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. I hope to come again too. It's been really my pleasure. Hare Krishna.
Well, I'm glad Gary did all that for me. So.
You can also hear it on the radio.
Yeah. I'm at work.
So yeah, you
missed it's a matter of trying to get my husband then to
tape it, huh?
Tape it, yes.
Yeah. They have machines that do that very well.
Oh, yes, I know, but.
Apparently, people can record on television. They can record everything. And.
Yeah, well, VCRs have a timer on.
Yeah, that's right.
So.
Well, you know what's nice about this? If nobody else hears, the station manager has to listen to everything. So at least somebody's gonna, and one of them has actually taken prasadam here.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what he told me about that. So we had a meeting. He's taking.
I have a guy who's my acupuncturist, Ashley Wiper, who's a graduate of the University of Windsor. He's a Canadian.
Really?
Yeah.
What's his first name?
Ashley. Uh-huh. Ashley Wiper.
Because one of my husband's doctors is a Wiper.
Yeah, maybe it was a relative. He's from, he graduated from. college in Windsor. So he asked me, how's Detroit? He knows the turf.